Hey, welcome to the Energy Question with David Blackman. I'm your host, David Blackman, and my very special guest today is one of the finest energy advocates, writer, podcaster, all around man about town, David Ramsden Wood. David, how you doing?
I'm doing great, David. It's good to see you again. I enjoy opening my Twitter feed and my daily newsletter from you on the energy absurdity of the day. And I mean, you're absolutely spot on. Your article today around the Google searches on gas stoves, I thought would totally hit the point. And it's amazing how these like trusted sources, Google, as you know, is 93% of global search goes right through Google. And when they're artificially elevating things that are factually just wrong, it questions the whole model. So I don't know anyone that prefers electric stoves to gas stoves. I don't know anyone that would buy a house that did not have a gas stove. So there's going to be a secondary market for refurbishing old gas stoves that should exist for a very, very long time.
Yeah, I think you're right about that. I think it's almost inevitable now that the Biden administration is going to regulate them, you know, out of the market, the new sales of them. And sooner or later, they'll be sending the FBI to come confiscate your old gas stoves here a few years in the future. I mean, it's really extraordinary that they're focused on something that trivial, absolutely trivial, when they claim to have this climate emergency going on.
Yeah,
it's just mind-boggling to me.
Well, as you've pointed out in many of the articles, like this whole concept of an emergency, the parallels between climate and COVID have been so strong.
Yep.
And something doesn't last. An emergency doesn't last 3 years. An emergency is like a week. And then, you know, all across the globe, like I live in Denver, you live in Houston, people live in Canada. You're like 2 degrees. Shifts things maybe, and we have to adapt, and so maybe Phoenix becomes a little hotter for the July August timeframe, but these things go in bursts, and as you know, hundreds of millions of years ago, North America was predominantly covered by an ocean, and so like we have changed the climate dramatically over the course of time long before humans were influencing it. So just the lack of discussion, debate, critical thinking, insights is really just so shocking in the public.
It is, and so much of it is the irresponsible way it's covered in the media. At least that's my belief. I wonder what you think about that. I mean, it's like every morning we're just treated to a steady stream of propaganda with very little real information that's based in fact and science.
Oh, I mean, absolutely. And I think for those who tuned in for the Chris Rock Netflix live comedy special, he kind of had a joke about Russia and Ukraine. And he said that the country is so divided over so many things that if the Russians invaded the US, like half the country would be like, well, let's hear what they have to say. This could be a little bit better of an option. And yeah, and really and truly, like we have major issues around education, healthcare, you know, and to talking about what an Advil at a hospital, they charge like $90 for an Advil or something, which is clearly insane. And yet we're not talking about those real issues. And on the energy policy front specifically, hybrids are more efficient, more cost effective, use less minerals, and is a baby step towards a place we may want to go without rebuilding the entire grid. I would happily own a hybrid if I had
Me
the
too.
Opportunity. I will never own a purely electric car because the range anxiety that it brings, the cost, the weight of it, there's just so much that is failing, and it's quite remarkable.
You know, you talk about the weights of it. People don't understand how heavy these cars are, man. They're like 20% heavier than a comparable gas-powered car, right? People don't understand the enormous multi-trillion dollar cost that's going to bring to just fixing infrastructure and reinforcing infrastructure to deal with these heavier vehicles, right? I mean, they're going to cause so much damage, you're going to end up having to rebuild the entire transportation system, aren't you?
And parking garages downtown.
Oh, yeah.
You know, you put all these electric cars in there. And again, like people, we like to cherry pick. Norway, I think the fleet, the car mix in Norway is 60% or something electric. Mm-hmm. But predominantly, their power is hydro. And so like they're built around an entirely different structure than we are here. And when we talk about the weight, I wrote a post 2 years ago and it was on the Chevy Bolt. And I know people had seen this, but they did about a $1.5 billion recall because two bolts had spontaneously burst into flames in a garage. And notwithstanding the fact the Chevy Bolt is more expensive than the Ford Escape by $12,000, notwithstanding without a supercharger, it takes 9 hours to gas this thing up versus, you know, and you get 250 miles of range. But the recommendation that they had for the Bolt was that number one, you should not charge your car overnight. And number two, you should not park it in a garage. And this was Chevy's, you can Google it, like fact check me. But they legitimately made the recommendation. Who is driving during the day or charging during the day and driving at night? I get maybe Uber drivers or something, but it's just insane. And it's so impractical that they're pushing these technologies that make no sense and aren't there yet.
Yeah, they aren't there yet. And I'm not sure they're ever going to, at least in a way that's going to be scalable to fully displace gas-powered cars. It's hard to see how that actually happens. And you know, everybody I've talked to recently you ask them about where are we in this energy transition? Where would you say we're in this energy transition?
So, I mean, I would say, and I've seen the rhetoric change a little bit, maybe not the rhetoric, but it seems that, you know, for years, the last 5 years, there's been this talk of the energy transition, but no one's had to experience what that actually means.
Yeah.
And I think maybe starting with the polar vortex in Texas and subsequent to that, people are now experiencing what it means to have an unstable grid, unstable access to power, and seeing the results of these policies. And so, you know, where are we in the energy transition? I think that reality is beginning to hit this transition in the face. And we're seeing, like, we should talk a lot about Europe, but the fact that Germany didn't rely on Russian gas and that the weather was relatively moderate and mild saved them a lot.
Yeah.
But the fact that, I mean, and I think it was Steve Seymour Hersh wrote the article. And I think you and I have the same opinion. Like the day that the Nord Stream pipeline was blown up, it was the Americans or American adjacent, because the Russians have this little thing called a valve. Why would you do billions of dollars of damage to your economy when you can just close the valve and then open the valve? And, you know, as Seymour laid out in his very well sourced article, I thought that the Americans had put some remote devices in using cover of a naval exercise 3 months before. They put them on the pipeline and then they remote detonated them 3 months later to ensure that if Europe struggled and suffered through high gas prices this winter, they had no option to get Russian gas. And so it was, but nonetheless, Europe has been saved by mild weather so far. And, you know, we'll see where we get next year.
Yeah, you know, they have been. Germany, though, has lost an awful lot of industry. They've gotten through the winter and you know, haven't had a lot of people die, which is really good. Nobody's freezing in the dark, but they're losing an awful lot of their industrial infrastructure and their base. And I just feel like that's got to have some pretty major economic consequences for them down the road, don't you?
Absolutely. I think I read an article, BASF was closing one of their, you know, and certainly aluminum and other these high energy intensity. And I think we forget that without industry, there are no jobs. And without jobs, people go bankrupt and suffer and lose houses. And so no doubt. And I do find it, I don't know if I want to use the word ironic, but the fact that the Inflation Reduction Act, which actually creates massive commodity inflation in cobalt and copper and all these fake subsidies for cars that people are buying. But then Europe is like, well, if the US is doing these subsidies, we need to do these subsidies.
We're going to have a subsidy war.
We had a generally down year in the stock market, whereas in 2020 and 2021, capital gains, I mean, California had a budget surplus because the tech guys were getting so much money on capital gains. Well, that's not going to happen in 2022. So as we project this debt ceiling that we're hitting, we're already using emergency measures without the tax receipts of these capital gains. And quite honestly, a lot of people harvested losses. We have these budget issues that no one's talking about. Like, why are we at some point we have to, I think, have to deal with debt, and we have to stop subsidizing, and we have to start promoting efficiency. And anyway, it's I don't know how we got here, David.
Well, it's hard to explain, isn't it? I mean, the last 4 years have been incredibly difficult to explain from any standpoint of logic or rational thought. Starting with the COVID pandemic and coming up through today, it's almost as if literally nothing our federal government has done has made any sense at all. Yeah. In any real way. And you wrote that great story on your Substack comparing the way we're dealing with climate now to the way we dealt with COVID in 2020, that I think really everyone should read. Talk about, I mean, it's a very long piece, but it's really incredibly well done. And talk about, you know, what you wrote about in there in terms of the emergency powers and, you know, all these important things that most people don't ever even think about.
Well, I mean, and I think the COVID, as we've come out, and I think that for me, the thing that will always resonate, Novak Djokovic, the greatest tennis player, arguably of all time, one of the healthiest humans on the planet, is banned from entering the United States due to the lack of a vaccine that neither stops the spread, nor in a case like Novak Djokovic is really keeping him out of a hospital. What's keeping him out of the hospital is that he is the fittest man on the planet. So I think about that and the way that we didn't debate these things. They were all passed as emergency measures, emergency powers. You know, we're not even stopping the emergency pandemic response from the federal government until May, 3 years on. And so similar to where we started with the gas stoves, et cetera, we're using emergency powers or EPA powers or the CDC is declaring a climate emergency and therefore the CDC is going to have powers to influence, and none of it's being done above board, and they're circumventing the political process on every action we've taken. So as we did with COVID, we're seeing with climate. And it was the elections. The last time I think I came on the podcast was April 22, and that was obviously before the midterm elections. And it's remarkable how none of the issues that needed to be talked about got talked about.
Yeah.
And abortion, which I had written about it in the beginning of 2022, that Roe v. Wade was going to be one of the five single most important factors that were going to dictate the way the year went. And it was insane to me how much of an impact it had, that people just go back to the polls and just vote who they voted, and that we didn't see this red wave. And in fact, it was such a single voter issue that we've made no progress as a country. And so we have to wait till 2024, which, how crazy is that?
It's insane. It's nuts. And did you see how the city of San Francisco, you talk about the emergency being rescinded in May. Do you see how the city of San Francisco is responding to that?
No, I didn't. I've seen some pieces out of San Francisco from Michael Schellenberger, but what's the latest?
So their city government is about to pass an ordinance that's going to make it a criminal act now, punishable by fines and jail time, if you don't wear an appropriately restrictive mask into public buildings and 17 other kinds of buildings in the city of San Francisco. Now, that's how that city is responding to the fact that the state government and the federal government are finally acknowledging that the emergency is over by doubling down on insanity.
Yeah. And again, and so when we started at the top of the show about propaganda from the media, it is so clear that we're not being presented critical thinking. Like, I mean, the most recent example, of course, is I believe it's the Department of Energy, which I'm not exactly sure why they're weighing in, but apparently they are. And a former FBI head are acknowledging that the lab leak theory in Wuhan as the start of this is the most likely outcome. We knew in March of 2020, we even knew before that three of the scientists got sick and the wife of one of the scientists that worked there died in November. That year, everyone was getting sick in January. Like that thing had been circulating and we had the evidence and yet you get banned and 3 years later, everyone's like, well, we kind of knew. It's like the Twitter files. You see these Twitter files and you see, you know, politicians are saying, ban these guys. And it's Russian disinformation. Right. Here's the
weekly
list.
Meetings with the FBI.
Meetings with the FBI. And everyone reads them. And the people who before said there was no cancel culture and that social media companies were fair, they're like, well, of course we knew that. And those of us who've been calling for how ridiculous this is. And the fact that LinkedIn won't even look at my appeal to allow me back on LinkedIn.
Oh my God. Unbelievable.
And, you know, for 3 years, they've excluded the ability of major contributors to have conversations, and that somehow that's become the norm in our country. It's why I love the Substack channels and what the Free Press is doing with Barry Weiss and what Michael Schellenberger's been doing. And we have these independent voices that, you know, like him or hate him, Joe Rogan is Joe Rogan. He's speaking his truth and he's allowing listeners to decide what they want to research, which I think is important.
It is important. And it's what I used to think our country was based on, was the free exchange of ideas. And, you know, you talk about getting banned. I was banned from Twitter for 2 weeks for not even saying anything, but simply retweeting an article that said, you know, there might be something here with this lab leak theory. And that was in like May of 2020. Yeah. And now it's like everybody say, oh, yeah, you know, that's probably right. I mean, so, okay, fine. But what about all that stuff back then that no one at MSNBC or CNN will own up to? It's really depressing.
It is. And so, you know, we talked about it just before we went live. I've struggled. I've reduced the volume I write. I think in part because there's voices like yourself. There's the Robert Bryces of the world. There's a ton of people who are now, whereas in 2018, 2019, when I started the Hot Take of the Day, there weren't a lot of voices that were really speaking out on a lot of these issues. And obviously I started in terms of like an industry self-diagnosis, which was we weren't running particularly good ship. We were overproducing into a low commodity price environment and leveraging ourselves with debt and then not merging and consolidating to become more efficient in this ESG world. And I'd been writing about that since 2018 and everyone thought I was crazy.
And you were absolutely right about all of it.
Yeah. Lo and behold, now we're actually running real businesses, which make the Exxons and the Chevrons and the Oxys and many of these other companies attractive to own. And the real issue in the energy transition is these companies are running out of inventory. And there's very large companies that are very well known that we know have 2 or 3 years of real inventory. And what happens when we don't have oil wells to drill in the US? When commodities don't cross borders, soldiers will. And so we need to start mending relationships with the Brazils, Irans, Iraqs, Argentinas, so that we can get more international development for this important resource. And only when this resource is depleted to the point where prices are so high that these other technologies make sense, are we really going to transition? And that's not a transition. That's called like the natural evolution of technology.
And don't you see, though, that in terms of our relationships with these other countries, it's kind of going in the opposite direction? I mean, even with Saudi Arabia, it feels like there's been tremendous damage done between our relationship with that, you know, kingdom that's been so important for 80 years now.
Well, certainly when the bully, which the U.S. has been and has had that role really since, you know, post-World War II, when our economy was growing and Europe was rebuilding, there was a great transition. And now we're seeing it in China. Like it or not, China is the most populous country in the world. I mean, maybe save India, but those two economies are where it goes. And so we're now being punished. The fact that we just took Russia's reserve currency, I think we just like shut off access to $600 million and then wouldn't allow them to pay their debts at the beginning of the war, made the countries like, so if the US doesn't like me, I'm going to be punished. So how does that become a reserve currency for the world? And all of a sudden we've seen Saudi Arabia, Brazil, India, China, Russia, all start looking to the secondary currency or second currency that would compete with the US dollar. And if we can't fund our debt with these low, cheap world reserve debts, I mean, we're in real, real trouble. And yet trans issues are the ones that we get talked about. And you talk about anything here, disinformation, misogynist, racist, homophobic, white male, toxic supremacist. And like every time I get called a name, I know I'm onto something, because no one wants to debate the facts. They just want to call me names. So
yeah, it does seem to be, the escape from logic for so many people, right? It eliminates the need for you to reason or make an argument if you just call somebody a name and move on. And that's a really frightening development over the last 10 years in this society, I think.
Yeah. And I think, you know, on the energy transition, the key question that I pose to students I teach a class, I pose it in speeches that I give, what is the actual impact of 2 degrees Fahrenheit? Now, everyone likes to blame drought on climate change.
We never had droughts before, right?
And the dirty 30s, the Dust Bowl, the farming practices. I use the Colorado River, which doesn't make it to the Gulf of California anymore, because we used to have 20 million people supported on this river. We now have 40 million people supported on this river.
Yeah, at least.
And California grows almonds, which are massively water intense.
Yeah.
And for all the talk of climate change, you know, we still import watermelons in November from South America on diesel boats with diesel trucks with all this. So for what? We invest 90 calories of energy to move the watermelon here just so some kids can play soccer in November and eat watermelon slices that they eat half of. Like, these are the conversations that, like, if we were just being incrementalization or mindful, let's improve fuel efficiency standards by encouraging more hybrids. Let's stop growing foods that take huge amounts of water. Let's debate the merits of importing watermelons. And, you know, if Amazon is so fired up about this climate pledge arena and saving the world, how come I could have an Amazon driver at my house in 3 hours delivering a product I don't need and have that truck come 15 times a week?
Yeah, where's Amazon? Three in one day on Saturday. Yeah,
we're only going to deliver when we happen to be in your area. You'll get your package sometime in the next week based on us reducing our miles 70%.
Yeah.
That's not even a conversation.
No, it's not a conversation. And it's because I think it doesn't play to people on an emotional enough level, right? But the point I've always made about when people ask me what my view is on carbon and climate, my answer is always, I'm kind of agnostic on all that. Obviously, there's some science out there that shows a warming effect, but really, I look at it on a solutions standpoint. The human race, it seems to me, has always been really good at mitigations on not just changing weather, but major weather events. And why not apply that to changing climate as well? If the sea level is going to rise a foot, well, then build some levees. Oh, my God, look at how great we are at building levees and dams and dikes around the world. We're incredibly smart species in terms of mitigating against those kinds of impacts. The thought that we can just stop it by changing all these things and rebuilding the entire $180 trillion economy and, you know, all the crazy stuff you see talked about, to me is just, it's a fantasy. And we're not going to solve anything by living in a fantasy world. And that's where I'm afraid that's where we're living right now.
Well, and people forget Amsterdam is 6 feet below sea level.
Yeah. New Already. Orleans is 11 feet below sea level.
So buildings are supposed to last 35 or 40 years. The sea level's going up a foot in the next 75. It would seem we could move a little inland. We keep rebuilding New Orleans after it gets hit by hurricanes. And I like New Orleans, but like, what are we doing? There's no reason. And then so a city gets destroyed, move it.
Or disperse it. Yeah.
There's so much. And so how does one muddle through the fog without getting frustrated? And again, I use COVID as an example. I have some friends from my son's hockey team that are doctors. And when they recount their experience in early 2020, obviously they were essential workers, so they needed to be in the hospitals, and the hospitals were full-ish. They're full all the time because that's how they're built, but we just were aware that they were full. And they said they were so busy that they didn't have any time to sit back and read any of the material on it. And so they were just in this sort of myopic, like, we have to solve for this, but they never took a step back and said, okay, so why this? If sea level is the primary concern and it's going up a foot, what are some different things that we could do? Well, I don't know what it is. It seems to me me when a hurricane goes through Houston, trillions of gallons of fresh water that have been naturally cleansed from humidity and formation in clouds and dropped in rain. It would seem to me if we could do a better job of capturing that water before it goes back to the ocean and then put it on some of the old crude pipes and pump it into the north part of the Colorado River and use that to recharge the source of water. Like, that seems like it would be less than a $150 trillion fix to just better capture fresh water and help impact sea levels.
Right. We have this extraordinary example happening in California right now. They have a record snowpack. And because they have refused to build surface reservoirs for 30 years now in that stupid state, it's all going to flow into the ocean when it melts. Virtually all of it. Well, yeah. I mean, why not try to capture some of that, ship it back to Colorado, to the headwaters of the Colorado River, and let it flow down and supply 40 million people with fresh water. But nobody wants to think about anything like that.
No.
Because it's not a good virtue signal.
And at the root, this is all about money. And I have no problem with the capitalistic system, but we should just acknowledge that people are trying to create commercial solutions for which they benefit financially to solve a problem. And so rather than like the best, XL Energy has a 10.1% regulated rate of return on every capital project they spend. And so they get to charge consumers when they replace a coal plant and spend $1 billion, as they're planning to do, to shut down Comanche, which was supposed to last till 2070. And they're going to shut it down early along with a lot of the other coal plants in the state of Colorado. They're charging consumers $1 billion to shut them down. Yeah. And then they're building $7 billion worth of solar and transmission that they're charging a 10% rate of return on that $7 billion. So their earnings go up $700 million a year. And they have no risk that people aren't going to use it. And then people get mad that their electricity bill is 20% higher today than it was a year ago. Right. And then they blame fossil fuels for this.
Yeah.
And so I've taken a step back because it is like, and you know, you can spin into these circles of frustration. And the way I've been managing it of late is the exercise and trying to focus on like things that you can control. And honestly, you know, all of us can influence our kids' success in the future, and we can all live a little healthier. Which, can you imagine if Trump came out in 2020 and said, we're going to shut the country down for 30 days because all of us are fat. We're going to shut down McDonald's, and we know obesity is the leading contributor to hospitalizations in 78% of the cases, and 95% of people who end up in hospitals have 4.0 comorbidities. So we're going to spend 30 days, we're going to shut down McDonald's, we're going to run cooking classes on TV, everyone's going to learn to cook healthy, we're going to get fit, we're going to lose 20 pounds. I'm down 30 pounds since January 1st. My son is down 37 pounds since January 1st.
So your son's winning.
My son is going to kick my bottom.
Killing you.
Because and amazingly, like, he is an athlete, but he plays golf. And so he just ate what he wanted, and he didn't really care about the body thing. But as soon as it became real that like your stamina improves, your health improves, your mental focus improves, you can be less distracted. He's been eating unbelievably, working out, down 37 pounds, and now we're what, 66 days since we started? Everyone can do it. It's eat less, exercise more. That is the simple health answer to happiness, I think.
I think you're right, and I think we're out of time.
There you go. Well, I
hate to say it, but I think we are. Man, this has been fantastic. We need to do this again soon.
David, it's great to see you. I love your writing. I'm sure everyone who listens to this follows it, but you identify the most ridiculous absurdities that exist, and folks, you just can't make it up.
You can't. It's a target-rich environment. David, thank you so much, and thanks to the Sandstone Group for hosting our podcast and our extraordinary producer, Eric Perel. I'm David Blackman, signing off for now. We'll see you next time.